Hi, this is John Barnes, and you're listening to Cop On.
Ah! Ooh, sorry. Very professional beginning there. Welcome to Cop On Podcast, you fruity mothers. This is a very excited, wonderful time, a beautiful time to be a Liverpool fan as we sit majestically on top of the league, the marvellous, marvellous season we're having against all of the odds, with an extreme amount of injuries and referee bias against us and all the whole leagues against us and everybody. Nobody wants us to win, including the referees. And here I am, delighted to be joined by Nigel to talk about how Liverpool are going to get through the next 9 games and win this frickin' beauty. But before we get into it, here's a poem that I've just discovered, who's amazing, who my lovely girlfriend Stephanie put me onto, called Lucille Clifton. And this is a poem called Blessing the Boats, as we all may be blessed on our journey towards this 20th Premier League title. It goes a little bit like this. May the tide that is entering even now the lip of our understanding carry you out beyond the face of fear. May you kiss the wind, then turn from it, certain that it will love your back. May you open your eyes to water, water waving forever. And may you, in your innocence, sail through this to that. I think it's a remarkably poignant and beautiful and original poem by Lucille Clifton. Nigel, speaking of sailing through this to that, here we are with 9 games left. Are we just going to win them all and we'll get through to that by just winning all 9? I mean, can we afford to drop points?
Not really. No, I don't think we can, but all we can do is take one at a time. God, if it was as easy as that, you know, being a Liverpool fan is not easy. It really isn't. You know, we were cruising the league in 1920, winning, I think, by 25 points at one stage. The next thing, we get hit by a pandemic. You know, it's incredible, really. There's nothing easy. There's nothing easy, but if anyone can do it, these lads who have come in the wake of an awful lot of injuries and done remarkably well, guys like Jurrell Kwanzaa, Conor Bradley, Quivin Kelleher, all the young lads that have come in over the season, and the new guys that have stepped in. Like, we got turned down by 2 players from the lure of money that went to Chelsea, and we signed a 30 at the time, Japanese midfield player, whoever, was saying, oh, he's not good enough. And we're still saying that a couple of games after he'd played a couple of games for us. Now, indispensable, Wataru Endo. It's been a remarkable thing, really, that we've battled against. Odds that have been stacked against us, I think, more than anything. But yeah, it's great. It's brilliant to be a Liverpool fan right now.
You can go through them all, can't you? I mean, you know, Alisson and Quivin Kelleher starting at the very back. I mean, they've both been extraordinary. And it's just continued. And Jürgen's announcement did seem to galvanise us in terms of, you know, we've been, you know, doggedly resolute as opposed to, I don't know, cattedly resolute. I mean, if you're dogged, you're always resolute, I suppose. Excuse that expression. But we've been dogged. We've been, you know, full of a might as well as an incredible talent. And the players seem to be getting even better. I didn't doubt Wataru Endo even when we signed him. I was actually very excited because I really wanted a 6. I wanted another number 6, and I still kind of do for the next manager coming in. But the guy who started the season there before Wata got his chance was Alexis McAllister. And let's just talk about him for a moment, because I've mentioned this a couple of times recently, I think. For me, he has become the complete footballer, Nigel. I'll bring up some of his stats the other day. But, you know, apart from things like pace that you're sort of born with. I mean, you can work on it to a degree, but I'm not going to expect him to suddenly develop a lot of pace. Apart from that natural attribute, he's got the rest. And it seems like he's got a different cookbook to the rest of us. I mean, I don't know what the culinary history of Ireland is, but where I'm from, the island of Jersey, judging by our specialities, it was pretty dark core, the food there. But, you know, just across the water in France, I mean, they had different cookbooks where you were able to make tarte aux pommes and beautiful things. And, you know, we were just eating like, I don't know, like fried flour balls because we thought that was exotic. So, you know, it's like Alexis McAllister's got a different cookbook. Football's been in his family for a long time. And, you know, it's like he's learned from the previous masters. This is like the generations and generations of kora players, the West African instrument that's just passed down from father to son. And it's just you just get these series of masters that just, you know, sometimes even get better and better from generation to generation. It's that kind of feeling from McAllister. Every time I look at a team sheet, Nigel, and I see McAllister's on it, as luckily he has been so often, I just thinking, man, we've got every chance of winning the game today.
Yeah, I said to one of my colleagues here yesterday in work, Liverpool win the league, Alexis McAllister, player of the year, Premier League player of the year. That's for me because he's just been absolutely crazy. That performance on Sunday was just, my God. We might have only won 2-1, but he put up, you know, it was a joy to watch. Absolute, complete and total control of our team. It was just, he's driving along on a big straight road in cruise control, one arm out the window, one arm temporarily touching the steering wheel to direct. Just that's how he comes across to me. He's just an amazing player.
Totally, totally. And speaking of Sunday, Liverpool 2, Brighton 1. I mean, it was a cracking match. I mean, it was a brilliant match. Compare it to the dross, the drivel that came after it, Manchester City versus Arsenal. Liverpool, Brighton, that was where it was at. That was that they put the super in Super Sunday because it was a cracking match. But I don't know about you, my nerves during that game were, even though we were dominating, we were doing very well. It's just, you know, Salah kept taking heavy touches. We can talk about him in a minute, but just generally your thoughts on that game in terms of your emotional weather, because you're a one game at a time kind of guy, Nigel. We've spoken about this many times, but you know, during that one game at a time with all of your focus on it, were you having kittens? Were you having pumas? Were you having, I don't know, baby lions?
Well, you get nervous. Yeah, you do get nervous. When they scored, it doesn't give you a great feeling. You know what I mean? That was what. Before, if we went a goal down, you're having palpitations. Here we go again. We're behind again and we could concede again. No, strictly speaking, we could have probably conceded again. But when Liverpool go behind now at the moment, you've always got a feeling that we'll dig our way out of this. Like 26 points from losing positions this season, the most by any team by a long, long, long way. You know, it's just great heart and dedication and like, to go back to what we were saying about players and resilience, I'll go to our first goal scorer whose dad was kidnapped earlier on in the season. And when does that happen? And he scored a great goal. He scored a fantastic volley. That was really difficult. And this, what you were saying about it earlier, I'm not going to mention too much of it, but they had to check VAR, which they shouldn't have done because the last touch came off a Brighton player before Lucho put it in the top corner. It shouldn't have even been applicable that it went to VAR because of the final touch.
I mean, yeah. To be fair, there was like a one that he was onside, but it was fairly close in terms of when the ball left the Liverpool player's foot, but then the deflection off Veltman, of course, it wasn't offside. But we could talk about the referees all game. I mean, David Coote, jeepers, he's just not up to the job. He's proved it time and time and time again. We had 20 fouls against us in that match compared to Brighton, who had 5 against them. That's not the match I saw. You know, that was not Liverpool weren't being, you know, overly aggressive. And there's only one other referee since they started counting. This stat comes from Andrew Beasley on X or Twitter today. He said that there's only one other time in the history of refereeing that it's ever happened that a team that is dominating a match with more than 50% possession gives away 20 or more fouls. And that was Chelsea a few years ago. And it was the same referee, David Coote. And he's like, it's just one stat you could bring up for how much of a nonsense he is. But this is the thing with this season. Let's not get bogged down into the refereeing. We know they're against us. We know that Anthony Taylor is going to be the referee against Manchester United. Or at least you told me that. Is that right? He's going to be.
Yep.
Yeah, and he's from Manchester.
Yeah. And John Brooks. John Brooks is on VAR.
And John Brooks on VAR. Wow, amazing. Blind John Brooks is his Blues name. But there you go. We're not going to talk about it because this is just one of the many things against Liverpool that we've risen up against this year. But from that Brighton thing, let's just look at the positives from that Brighton match, because it was a brilliant match. I was so happy, you know, looking back on it, just the brilliance of Alexis McAllister, all kinds of things that were going on. Actually, the beginning of the match when Adingra, who was a player that on our WhatsApp group I sort of signaled before the match, like, you've got to watch out for Adingra. I really rate Adingra. I think he's a wonderful talent. Yeah. And lo and behold, he was, he was tearing up that flank and doing really well. But Connor Bradley, if you look at FotMob, that famous stats app, and also WhoScored.com, interestingly, Connor Bradley got the man of the match, whereas to the eye test, and there are lots of other stats as well that back it up, Alexis McAllister was certainly the man of the match. But Connor Bradley, just to give you some stats, he had 2 shots, 4 key passes, right? Defensively, he was by far the best of our players. Statistically, he had 6 tackles. The next best was Joe Gomez and Alexis McAllister with 3. Connor Bradley had 6. He had 3 interceptions. Jarrell Kwanzaa had 4. He was the most in our team. So Connor Bradley, 6 tackles, 3 interceptions and 2 clearances, which is also the second best in the team. And his rating on WhoScored.com was a whopping 8.12, which is basically like godlike levels for WhoScored.com. But he was, you know, and the more you think about it and look back on his performance, he was isolated tactically. And that one might have been a plan by De Zerbi, because he's very, you know,
definitely a plan.
Particular in his planning.
Yeah. Do you remember, is it 2 or 3 years ago, we played against Brighton and they beat us 4-1. There was a guy called McAllister in the middle of the field that ripped us apart. The same day.
Very true.
They beat us 4-1.
Absolutely.
And their tactic was knock the ball in over our midfield, down our right-hand side, in over the top of Trent, into the hole. And they scored 4 goals. They scored 3 in the space of about 20, 25 minutes in one half by playing that exact ball and the ball going in behind our right back, our right-sided midfield player, and our centre-back. And it was exactly the same plan. I said the same thing on the Cop Council the other night. We got absolutely eaten alive by Alexis McAllister that day. And, like, they were just hitting the ball. It was the goal they scored. It was just, like, how many times does that go into the top of the stand? You know, he hit it really well. But
totally. I mean, it was a brilliant goal. Danny Welbeck's goal, you mean? Strike. Absolutely. Absolutely.
It was a brilliant strike. But that happened to us, like, 3 or 4 years ago. And it was the same plan. And until we kind of corrected it a little bit and Conor Bradley started pushing on a slightly higher line, we looked like we were going to get caught again. But we closed it up. We managed to close down the space.
But that's the thing, though. And until we did close it up, it was Bradley versus Adingra. And Adingra did fairly well against him. But then you had Kwanzaa covering on that side as well. And it's not Mo Salah's job to get back. And you know, he's an attacking player. We like him to stay up where he can do damage in terms of scoring goals and creating goals. So he was very much isolated, but I thought he did it absolutely wonderfully well. He was absolutely strong. It's great to have loads of people in the chat, by the way, already. Gary Richards is here. Alan C is here. Hi, Alan. Tally-ho, Gary. We got Stefano is here. Michael Corleone, LFC. He says, the title, let's fucking go. Yeah, Stefano, that is the attitude. And Doug from the dugout is here. Good afternoon, Reds. Good afternoon, Doug. Alexis McAllister is a joy to watch, says Doug. Yes, he surely is. He surely is. But, you know, they all are. Some key stats from there, from Brighton. Then I'm just going to move on, Nigel, because I know that you don't have very long. Just a couple of key things that really stood out for me. Wataru Endo, for example, 94% passing accuracy, the second most in our team after Quiveen Kelleher, but the most for an outside player, unless you count Ryan Gravenberch, who got 100% of his two passes. But no, Wataru Endo, 94% passing accuracy. He had 80 touches of the ball compared to Alexis McAllister, 91 touches of the ball, 92.2% passing accuracy for Alexis McAllister. And just incredible stats from Alexis. Five key passes, most of them to Mo Salah, who just was, he just had an off day. I'm not even going to go into Mo Salah's off day. He just had an off day. Don't worry. It was his first start since the 1st of January for Liverpool. And, you know, he's fasting, of course. It's Ramadan and, you know, sending, you know, great, you know, hellos to all of our Muslim friends who are, you know, doing Ramadan at the moment. I hope it's all been a very spiritual and wonderful time for everybody. And, so Mo Salah, he's just finding his rhythm back. And by finding his rhythm, getting a record 12 shots, only 4 on target, but the winning goal, which, and the first touch, I mean, just look at that goal back. You know, if you've got any kind of doubt about Mo Salah, just watch that first touch with his wrong foot and the left foot sliding finish. Beautiful stuff. And it sets us up, Nigel, especially because of the 0-0 that followed, for the future. Let's look at the future. You're a one game at a time kind of chap. So Sheffield United, we've played 136 official games against Sheffield United. In the last 5, we've won them all. 1-0 at Bramall Lane, then 2-0 at Anfield, 2-1 at Anfield, 2-0 at Bramall Lane, and 2-0 at Bramall Lane. God, your memory's good, man. You're like an elephant. You don't forget. This is fantastic. I've forgotten all of them, to be honest. I'll have to look them all up. But basically, we've won the last 5 matches against them. We've scored 2 goals in the last 4 matches and 1 goal before that. So in the last 5 matches, we've scored 9 goals. We've conceded only 1 and we've won all 5 matches. On paper, it should be easy. Are you expecting an easy game, Nigel? Because I'm not.
No. No, neither am I. I don't expect an easy game at all. They'll probably turn into Brazil against us or something. Brazil 1970.
That's what we were talking about last time, wasn't it? Every single team is going to be Brazil 1970. Yes.
Yeah. No, you've got to go out with the right attitude. Go out and be positive. If we can go out and be positive. The time we played them the year we won the league, and we got the ball down the wing. It was the return fixture. The 1-0 win was at Bramall Lane. They had the Man United keeper on loan. Gini Wijnaldum hit the shot, and the guy let it down through his arms and under his legs. But we beat them.
Yes, I do remember that one. Of course, yeah, that was a vital win. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, vital win, yeah. We beat them 2-0 at Anfield, I think, and in the first couple of minutes, there was a ball played down the left-hand side, and their defender missed it. He slipped and let Robbo in behind him down our left-hand side, and he crossed it over after 3 minutes, and Mo scored. And the second goal was Sadio Mane, I think. Yeah, Sadio Mane. The goalkeeper half-stopped it. Sadio hit a shot. The goalkeeper half-stopped it and spilled it, and Sadio went in on the rebound and kicked it into the top corner. So if we could get that start, you know, I think we're... It's hard to know what's going on sometimes when we could see goals, but there's a kind of a calmness sometimes. There used to be, like I said earlier on, there used to be a time if we conceded a goal, yeah, oh my God, here we go again, you know. But now, like, it's just, We'll be all right. That kind of attitude.
So you're going for like a narrow win kind of thing? Is that what you're thinking? Or we're going to claw back some gold?
I hope it might be a little bit more than narrow.
Okay.
But I think if we start well, we can get on the score sheet early.
Okay.
We could get a few, but I'm not going to be jumping around saying, we're going to score five or six. Nah, doesn't work like that.
Well, it might do. I mean,
It may do. I hope it does. I hope it does. I really do hope it does.
But you're not expecting it, yes.
I am, but I don't want to be, you know, this, we're the best and Sheffield United are the bottom of the table. We're top. We should win this handy. Can't do it. You just can't.
Well, you're right. I mean, every dog has its day and every bad team has its good match. I mean, since the beginning of February, looking at Sheffield United's record, they lost at the beginning of February, February the 3rd. They lost 5-0 at home to Aston Villa. Then they came back from that 5-0 to win 3-1 away to Luton. And we know from playing Luton, that's not an easy game, especially considering that was like a relegation big six-pointer. So they did really well to beat Luton 3-1. Then they followed that up with a miserable defeat, to be honest. 5-0 again to Brighton, where Sheffield United went down to 10 men. Their next game...
A terrible tackle on Matoma.
I didn't see it. Is that why Matoma's been out?
Yeah. Your man came across and beat him knee-high. Who was it? Was it our ex-player? Was it... what's his name? Brewster. Was it him that hit him? I can't remember, but it was a horrible tackle. He hit him knee-high in the kind of... across the way and hitting him in the opposite knee.
Oh, fuck.
Coming across it. It was an awful tackle. It was really poor. And then he complained about it was the straightest of straight red cards. It really was.
Oh, it was no. It was Mason Holgate, apparently. Holgate.
That's who it was. Yeah. Yes, that's who it was.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. But okay, so then after that, they lost to Brighton 5-0. I have to bring up the results back on my screen here. 5-0. Then they lost to Wolves away, only 1-0, which is not too bad a result because Wolves are really good. Then they got hammered at home by Arsenal, 6-0. And they've had two matches since that 6-0 where they've shown a bit of fight. The first one was 2-2 at Bournemouth, ground. And that's 2-0 up, but that's a good result, you know, all said. Bournemouth are flying this season. They're a much better team than Sheffield United. But 2-2, I think, is a good result. And then the last match Sheffield United played was 3-3 with Fulham. So they conceded five goals in the last two games. They've conceded five goals, but they've scored five goals. And there's something, you know, there's some kind of fight there. And, you know, they could bring their A game, but I just can't see them winning. I hate to sound arrogant, but them bringing their A game against Mo Salah and McAllister and Wataru Endo, and all of the, I mean, just go through any of our players.
I was listening to an interview this morning with Graham Souness, mm-hmm. and he said what our coaching staff used to tell them, Bob Paisley, Roy Evans, Ronnie Moran, and Joe Fagan used to tell our players, you go out and you match the effort man for man, 11 for 11, with these players in the other dressing room, we will win the game because we have better players.
Yes. No, that's totally true. That's totally true, isn't it? I mean, it should do, but I mean, you know, sometimes you can get a bad run of the ball or your players don't turn up for some reason. Maybe there'll be a case of nerves with but that's something that we can talk about, you know, going into it. What's the mentality going to be? Because for me, you have to just pretend that it's the beginning of the season. It's the first game of the season. You have to expect that Sheffield United are going to come out with a spring in their step, but we have to come out with a spring in our step as well, because it's the first game of the season. We want to put on a show. We want to show everybody in the league what we're about and just forget everything else. Everything else is just noise. So that's the kind of mentality I think we need. But there you go. I don't know. In terms of Sheffield United, I had some more things to say about it. But, yeah, in terms of mentality, our mentality is, I mean, it's been perfect all season, really, hasn't it? But now we're getting the players back. It's nearing the end. If we're going to drop points, it's not going to be at Sheffield United, is it? I mean, I said before, Liverpool have won our last five Premier League meetings. It's actually the last six Premier League meetings, because the one before that that I didn't read out was a 4-0 victory to us. Sheffield United have lost 10 of their last 12 away league games against Liverpool, with the exceptions being a 0-0 draw in March 1975 and a 2-1 win
the one all draw
in April 1994. Sorry?
Oh my God. We drew the one all draw in the first game of the season. No, first game of the season it was.
Oh, away from home, yeah. But not
away from home. Robbie Fowler scored a penalty. Yeah, Robbie Fowler scored a penalty. One all draw.
Man, it's all coming
in about when Robbie Fowler came back. I think it was the season after he came back. It would have been about maybe 2007, maybe.
Wow. Excellent memory. No, I don't remember that at all. But yeah, Liverpool have lost just one of our last 39 Premier League home games against newly promoted sides, won 32, drawn 6, and lost 1, which was a 1-0 loss against Fulham in March 2021. So that was, you know, bad times. But since that defeat, the Reds have won their last 8 games against newly promoted sides by an aggregate score of 28-5. I'm getting more and more confident the more I'm reading this. We're going to absolutely trounce them. We're going to just stamp on them. Liz Golden's in the house. We need to play well for 90 minutes. It doesn't matter who we are playing, says Liz. Absolutely, Liz. Yeah, we do need to play well for 90 minutes. We need to keep our concentration. But I think, yeah, we can do this. We can do this. Why not? Going forward, okay, look at the run and let's zoom out, okay, look at the run and you're a game-by-game guy, I know, Nigel, but I want to zoom out with you here, okay? So Liverpool, our remaining matches, if you look at them just in terms of the Premier League, are Sheffield United, Man United, Crystal Palace, Fulham, Everton, West Ham, Tottenham, Villa and Wolves. That sounds hard enough. Arsenal, by comparison, they've got Luton, Brighton, Villa, Wolves, Chelsea, Tottenham, Bournemouth, Man United and Everton. For some reason, to me, that sounds a lot easier than ours. Manchester City have Villa, Palace, Luton, Brighton, Forest, Wolves, Fulham, West Ham and Tottenham. That sounds easiest of the lot. But I put to you, Nigel, a different context, because a lot of the graphics I've seen are just focusing on the Premier League. But let's take the cups into consideration here, okay? We've got Atalanta. Atalanta are a fabulous team. We can't underestimate them. They've got brilliant, brilliant players. Coop Miners, absolutely fantastic midfielder. You've got to look out for some of their best players. They're incredible. I mean, I'm only going by the stats because I just follow the stats like a nerd, but they've got some wonderful, wonderful players. So they're going to be dangerous. Our run-in goes like this. Sheffield United, midweek game. And from then, we've got weekend games and midweek games all the way to the end of the season. Okay, so we've got Man United, then Atalanta, Palace, Atalanta, Fulham, Everton, West Ham, possibly Benfica, Marseille, then Spurs, then possibly Benfica or Marseille, or a break if we go out to Atalanta, which is entirely possible. Then Villa, then a break, and then Wolves, okay? So a lot of names, a lot of things to consider there, but basically the addition of Atalanta and then possibly Benfica or Marseille to our schedule. So we've got a possible extra 2 games before the end of the league season, and then any final would be after the end of the Premier League season for the Dublin match. Manchester City, they're running, including European games, sounds like this. They played Arsenal. It was 0-0. Shit game. Aston Villa, Palace, Real Madrid, Luton, Real Madrid, Chelsea in the FA Cup, Brighton, Forest, if they beat Real Madrid, they've got Arsenal or Bayern Munich, then Wolves, then Arsenal or Bayern Munich, then Fulham, then Spurs in a midweek game before their last game of the season against West Ham. That is incredibly intense. Arsenal have Man City, shit game, 0-0. They have Luton, then Brighton, then Bayern Munich, then Villa, then Bayern Munich. What a week that is. Then Wolves, oh, difficult. Chelsea, Spurs, City or Real, if they manage to get through Bayern Munich. Then Bournemouth, then City or Real, then Man United. Then a break midweek before the last game of the season against Everton. All of that, Nigel, is to say that when you factor in the European games, City and Arsenal, let's start supporting them both in Europe because we want them to get through to a semi-final because it's going to take a lot of energy. And I'm just not just talking physically, I'm talking mentally. What do you reckon?
I think we concentrate on us. We just, our lads go out, tunnel vision, blinkers on, straight down the line. Don't worry about them. We win all our games, we'll win the league. It's as simple as that. Don't worry about what other teams are doing. It's as black and white as that. The blinkers down there, who's beside us, I don't care what they do. We win 9 games, we win the league. Let's try and do it.
But then if you go with that attitude, then as soon as you draw a game or even lose a game, then panic can set in, Nigel.
Oh, I know. I know that. Yes, I absolutely know that. But you've got to go there with, I think, that attitude, because that's what you're trying to achieve, and make it about you. Don't give anybody else any reason to have cause to celebrate. Get out there, do the business. You're better than these guys, whoever you're playing against. You're better. I love that Souness thing. I really do. I thought. We go out there. He played on his debut, his home debut. They got beaten 3-2 by Birmingham after being 3-0 down. And then in the next home game, got beaten again. They hadn't lost at home in about 15 months at the time. But this attitude was drilled into him. If we match these guys, we'll win because we're better players. There's nobody in that fixture list of 9 games in the Premier League. There is none of those teams have better players than our club, man for man. So
we need luck with injuries, though.
Pardon? Yeah, I know, but now we've got players coming back as well. You know what I mean? We might have Trent back fairly soon. We'll hopefully have Jota back fairly soon. I said in January, if Jota stays fit, we'll win the league. Now he's missed a couple of games, but you know. We'll have some more players back, hopefully. There's a rumour that Rodri has carried an injury for City. He'd be a massive loss for City. He'd be absolutely huge.
He would be. But talking about our attitude and focusing on ourselves, I mean, Sven Goran Eriksson, excellent interview with him. And, you know, many of you will know, many of you watching and listening will know that he talked about this anecdote with Bob Paisley in the boot room, where he was asking them about an hour after the end of a match when we were going for the league with Man United and it was level at the top of the table. And about an hour after the game finished, he asked the Liverpool management staff, coaching staff, or what happened with Man United, and they had no idea, because they were genuinely completely concentrated on Liverpool. And there is definitely something to say from within the club. I hope that's the same, but for us fans, I don't know. I watch as much as I can of City and Arsenal because I want them to lose. And I want them to draw or whatever, you know, I, at least until the first goal goes in, I will watch City and Arsenal. And I think about them, you know, living rent free. I mean, I could start charging them. They could put it on their books and claim it as proof that they're the biggest club in the world, Man City, if they want. I just think that I can't do that. I'm looking at the bigger picture all the time. But looking at the bigger picture, I just think it's going to be too intense for them. I don't think we need to win 9 games. I think 7 and 2 draws. So we drop 4 points between now and the end of the season. We'll end up, I believe, on 91 points, maybe. Do correct me if I'm wrong. But there or thereabouts. And that'll be enough to win the league. 7 wins and 2 draws for now. So that's 23 points for us now. That'll be, no, there's, I don't know, 90 points? I don't know. My mathematics is absolutely horrendous these days. But yeah, Liz Golden says we have to play well, stay healthy, and keep our focus. Absolutely true, Liz. Absolutely true. Nigel, if you could pick one player, I know my answer to this. If you could pick one player to stay injury free between now and the end of the season, who would it be?
Alexis McAllister.
Oh, not my answer. Okay, why? Well, I mean, it's a stupid question. Why? Why? Because he's brilliant, right?
Well, apart from the fact that he's brilliant, he's our controller at the moment. He's our, everything seems to be going through him at the minute. If you look at everything coming in, it's all it's coming through him and radiating out from him. Now, if we get another couple of players back, it might slightly take a little bit of pressure off him.
But Curtis is coming back, though, Nigel. That's the thing. That's why, Alexis, I see what you're saying, but that's why he's not my answer, because Curtis is coming back. Curtis can do the controlling thing, and then we can leave it to other players like Szoboszlai and and the returning Trent, for example, to open doors like McAllister's been doing, to be a creative player. And Endo as well with great forward passing. I think we've got enough creativity, but the guy for me who we just can't lose is Big Verge at the back. Yeah. I think we're a bit screwed if he gets injured.
That probably would have been the second choice, but I think goals win games, and McAllister showed it on Saturday with that pass. Actually, you said it earlier on about the first touch of McAllister and the first touch of Salah. I'm going to say the two touches. So Bosley fizzed that ball in to McAllister. Mm-hmm. One touch, killed it, played a brilliant pass. Mo Salah, one touch, stopped it for himself, passed it in, stopped it with his right foot, passed it with his left foot. The two of them did it. It's just, I just think, like, he's a class act. He's a class player, and everything is going to go through him. He's a winner. He's a proven World Cup winner. And I think if he stays fit, if he's there to control us on the field, to be our driver, to be our leader from the midfield, I think we'll win it. I really do. I really do think we'll win it.
Well, yeah. I mean, fair enough. I mean, I think you're right. I think we've got the best team, Nigel. I do. I think we've got the best team. I think City this season, they're struggling tactically and physically because they don't have the numbers and the experience. And they from now till the end of the season, I might be wrong, but I'm going to suggest that they're going to really miss Gundogan, especially going forward.
And same kind of thing with Alexis McAllister. Mm. In the long run, you're looking for a player that's going to just push that little bit further, and Gundogan was that. Gundogan is a super player.
Well, absolutely. And you're talking about knitting things together. I mean, he was knitting scarves and socks and all kinds of winter hats with little poppers on. Absolutely wonderful.
Six-fingered gloves,
yes, for all the to give away to all the weird inbred fans they've got. Anyway, excuse me. They don't have that many fans, so I apologize. Liz in the chat, she says, we are kicking the crap out of United, though, right? On Sunday, we've got Sheffield United, pretty quick turnover to the United match. So just to sort of combine the chat about the two, are you going to rest anyone against Sheffield United, in order to really focus on Manchester United on the weekend? When I say rest, I mean, I include like 60-minute rest. I mean, maybe let's say, for example, you wanted to rest Mo Salah and just bring him on for 30 minutes at the end so that we don't rush his, integrating him back into the side. Would you do anything like that, Nigel? Or are you just thinking full guns blazing for every single match, play the best team for every match until they broke out?
I'd start our first team. I'd start our main men on Thursday. But if, as we were talking about earlier on, we can get a few goals ahead, bring on guys like Jaden Danz, give him a run. Just say, go out there, and terrorize those guys like you've been doing to other teams. Run at them, get in behind them. James McConnell, lads like that, give them a game. Don't start them. But there's definitely scope if we can get a few goals ahead for resting a few players, giving some of the younger guys a few minutes or some of the squad guys a few minutes and get, you know, give some of the lads a rest. That's what I'm hoping for.
Starting strong and getting weaker, taking people off as we go. So, I mean, you know, in terms of, you know, as we go along, what is our best team, basically? So Kelleher's in goal. Our best available team. I don't think Konaté is back. Let's say he's not back. So you've got Virgil and Kwanzaa at centre back, Connor Bradley, and who are you playing left back?
Joe Gomez.
Joe Gomez on merit. Okay, I get that. Absolutely. I totally get that. Okay. I'd be tempted in the Sheffield United match to give Tsimikas a start because I think he needs rhythm. I think it'd be a good game for him to get rhythm, but okay, if you're going, I agree that Joe Gomez has been our best left back this season. The number six, the midfield picks itself. Endo at the six with McAllister and Szoboszlai ahead.
Yep.
Or are you going McAllister and Jones?
No, he's not fit enough. Put him on the bench. Give him 20 minutes.
I think Curtis, he's been in full training for a few days now. I think he was back the same day as Brighton, or the day before maybe. So he might be fit enough, but you think bring him on?
Yeah, give him 20 minutes.
And based on form this season, for me, Curtis Jones gets in the team ahead of Szoboszlai.
Okay.
I don't know what you think about that. I think Curtis Jones has been in our top three midfielders this season.
Yeah, I think he's been very good, but you've got to be careful with the injuries. Match fitness and fitness is a different story, is a different thing. Getting up to speed of a match, you know, you give him 15, give him 20 minutes. I think it would be the way to go. And then I'd actually go with the same front three that started the other day.
Okay.
Diaz, Mo, and Darwin.
Okay. Apparently we're having some buffering issues. I'm having just internet issues today. I'm terribly sorry. But I mean, it's Darwin, Mo and Diaz up front. That's just, I mean, you know, you're not going to sleep if you're a Sheffield United defender, if you're a Man United defender, if you're Harry Maguire. But then, I don't know, they beat us last time, so maybe they're going to be confident going into the match against us, Man United. I hope they are.
Because
I
think
the more confident they are, the more chance we've got of absolutely trouncing them again, I would say.
I'm not going to say it, but I hate this fixture. I absolutely despise it with a huge passion. It's just, it's horrible. It's a horrible fixture. You can never relax. You can never, ever, ever relax. However bad they were when we were at our absolute best, I'm not sure if you remember, like mid to early 80s, they nearly always seem to turn us over. It just always seems to happen.
Right. Okay. Some people said, you know, on another channel, I think it was Coppish. I've been really enjoying their stuff recently on YouTube. Somebody said, if we beat United, then we win the league. Someone's that confident. Would you share that emotion, or is that premature?
No, not yet. It's 2 out of 9. Win 9 games out of 9, and I'll believe it.
Well, yes. Okay.
Let's get it done. Let's get it done. Then celebrate.
Well, okay. I think if we won 8 of the next 9, I think that would be enough to win the league, to be honest. I can see Arsenal and City both dropping points from here on in, but they might not. They might not. We've got to be on it. Okay. Well, there you go. I mean, it's all okay. Well, apparently we're still buffering. Thank you, Aid. It's really nice to have you with us. He says, or she says, I'm not sure. City. Are nowhere near as strong as previous seasons. I would agree with that, yeah, especially without Kyle Walker. If Rodri is injured, that's good news for us. John Stones, I mean, I don't wish injury upon anyone. I want to beat Man City when they are fully fit, but you can't deny that it's good news if they're not around. But anyway, Nigel, I know you've got to chip off in a minute. Thank you very much. for being a wonderful guest and joining us. So basically you're saying, even though in the games itself it's perfectly normal to be a bag of nerves and to be, you know, support us and but this team has given us so much belief that we should give the belief back, and we should totally believe in them to win each game as it comes around. Is that right? Is that a fair summary of how you're feeling about it all?
Yeah, that's a fair summary. I just, like, if I was going to the game, I don't get to go as often as I'd love to. I'd like to go, but it's great to watch a confident Liverpool team again. Like, there was discussions. Remember, we were having discussions last night. You actually suggested it, I think, about best players of the Roy Hodgson era. And I think I sent a crying emoji about it like that.
Sorry to bring back some terrible memories, but
that was a tough time to be a Liverpool fan, particularly ones who had been there, older ones that had been there for a long time and seen the success. You know what I mean? We had teams that could just, Bayern Munich putting maps in 1981 when they drew nil-nil at Anfield in the first leg, putting up maps of the way to Paris for the European Cup final, and Bob Paisley posting it up on the wall and telling Sammy Lee, "You go, man, mark Paul Breitner. One all draw, we go through and away goals." You know what I mean? That's belief. So it's all instilled. People, when fans, and a lot of our fans, a lot of our friends and fans know their history, and there's an inbuilt belief of being a Liverpool fan. You know, that's...
I would agree, and I think Jurgen Klopp has instilled it in all of us. We've got 9 league games left, potentially 5 European games left. We've got to just enjoy it, you know, as well. Jurgen deserves that we just give him our best and all of our positivity. The players are going to do their best. We've got to do our best to enjoy it and not get caught up in the nerves, and to stay cool, but at the same time stay focused, and hope the players are staying focused. And I think whatever happens from here on in, I don't know. I put this on our group chat as well, Nigel. I'm really there are two parts of me that are both valid. Okay. My brain is saying, look at what Jurgen's done. Look at what we've done this season. We've got no right to be anywhere near the top of the league. We've had at one point 14 injuries to our squad. There were 9 first team players out injured all at the same time. That happened to any other team in the world, they would be nowhere near the top of the league. And here we are at the top of the league. We've got no right to be here. We've already won a League Cup. Sorry.
We might not have any right to be there, Owen, but the players have earned the right to be there.
Indeed they have. I'm not diminishing the fact that they've earned it. They absolutely have. And we deserve to be there. Absolutely. And the players have brought us there. It's absolutely extraordinary. We totally deserve that. Yeah, that's an important point. But my brain, part of my brain is saying, okay, we've got 9 games left. City and Arsenal are 2 fabulous teams. City may have dropped down a peg or two. Arsenal may have, you know, jumped up more than a peg or two. They've, you know, we've been scaling the entire washing line, and they're standing atop. You know, we could easily lose the league to either of those. We just could. This is what my head is saying. And if that happens, we can't be too disappointed, because we've had Jurgen Klopp. We've had this incredible season where we don't have any right to be where we are. So that's what my head is saying, you know, all of these logical things, and just to enjoy it. And if we win it, obviously, wow. But my heart is just saying, da 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 da.
Yeah.
So that
it is,
all.
I know.
That's all. My heart is always saying. That's all I've got to say, is right. So follow Nigel at IrishRed11 on Twitter. It's been absolutely lovely to have you in the chat, and Liz and Gary and Doug and Alan. Stefano was here. Absolutely brilliant to have you all with us. And if you want to give us a follow on YouTube, you can. Cop on Podcast. We're up to 311 subscribers, chasing that 500 if we can. But, you know, to all of you listening around the world, to the audio feed, I mean, you are absolutely adored, and we're so happy to be sharing this excitement with you. So we're going into another ring of fire against Sheffield United. Let's all enjoy it. You'll never walk alone. Thank you very much, everybody.